we're really at the point now where we've grown, we've expanded, we've had this quick growth, and I think you have to be comfortable with making mistakes, and not everything's going to be a winner. And I try to be honest with my team here about it too, that if I don't have the answer to something, I just say, hey, what do you guys think? Like, you guys are, I joke and say, it's almost like a war. I'm like, you guys are on the front lines of cooking the food and interacting with customers. Like, what are you seeing? Like, what can I do to support you? And that's generally what I do. I do my work on the weekends, and my job here during the week is to support my team. You know, it's to be like, what can I help them with? Yeah. So I think it's advice, just trusting your people and being comfortable not knowing what you don't know, or hiring experts that are better at things than you. I'm like, man, my executive chef and our sous chef here, like, man, they could cook circles around me. I mean, they've elevated the menu in ways that, I mean, I never thought we'd have this caliber of food coming out of our kitchen, and I'm not ashamed or afraid to tell people that.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat and safely social distance during pandemics. As always, I am your co-host, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com, Matt Miller, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Lori Frederick, culinary editor, dining denizen, Lori Frederick. How are you doing at On Milwaukee?
Good.
How are you? I really jumbled up all those words into a pattern that doesn't make sense whatsoever, but you know what? We're rolling with it.
That's okay.
We're keeping going.
It's okay. It's going totally okay. So yeah, I'm doing
the
pretty
words,
okay. Pretty okay today.
Yeah, the words are coming to me pretty hard right now. So, I'm using all of them for the typing, not so much for the speaking.
Yes. Well, as in.
But thankfully, we have a guest today who can do the speaking for
us. We do. We do. We have a tall guy with a great story. And
that's not the name of his company.
No,
but
it's not.
It has a catchy title to it. We can do that.
There we go.
You should have like a whole brand of just like a tall guy and enter product, like tall guy and homes, tall guy and yes. Yeah.
Isn't that what the kids call selling out then? Right.
Right.
Honestly, selling out. Yes. I feel like anyone who can sell out, I say go for it.
Tall guy and jump in the shark. There we go.
I say get the money where you can.
But with no further ado, we are here with Dan Nowak from Tall Guy and a Grill.
Right now he's Tall Guy on a Skype call,
and that's true, or a Zoom call, as it were. So and. Dan's in a good place because, I mean, he started his catering business, a Tall Guy and a Grill.
I thought you were saying that because he's literally in a good place.
No, let's hope that's true.
He's in a room just filled with awesome Tall Guy and a grill product
like
placement.
So like, yeah,
this is I'm annoyed that we didn't do this one as a video because he would have been killing it right now. But unfortunately, yes, you are only marketing to me and Lori.
Imagine a podcast.
I could have made some money here. I could, like, every time the logo shows up on somebody's screen, I get like a half a penny or something like that.
That's right. Get them Spotify money.
Yeah.
Or we could have a drinking game. Every time.
Lori, you don't need me to slur my words any more than I already am.
Every time you see Tall Guy, you got to take a sip. But in all earnestness, I think it's been over a decade. I think we were talking a little offline. And Dan, you started your business like back in 2009. Yeah,
I did. Yeah, I started, kind of founded it in 2009. And then the first official events we did, you know, kind of outside family and friends were in kind of early 2010. So yeah, it's been about 10 years, and it was a part-time deal for me, but went full-time with this in July of 2013. So a little over 7 years now.
Yeah.
Well, what were you doing before all of this?
Well, just like anybody who wants to start a food business, you go to business school and get a finance degree first, right? That's the typical path forward. And
I think a lot of them wish they did that.
But that's like a smart move, I think, you know, in the long run.
Yeah.
You've probably found
that. Yeah. I had some accounting internships in college, and, got my first job was actually at Turner Hall, slinging fish fries and learn how to bartend there. And, it's one of those things where, you know, I got into my career, graduated with a finance degree and got a job working with 401k plans. this is usually the part where people start to fall asleep. I talk about all that kind of stuff.
This is where I politely put the Zoom background where it's like me, right? I'm totally awake.
Yep. Yep. You get the little machine moving the mouse to be like, yep, I'm still working. I'm still listening.
There you go.
But yeah, it's, you know, it was good. It was a great job. But you know, I couldn't see myself, you know, kind of punching the clock and sitting in a cubicle for the next, you know, 30, 40 years of my life. So, but just kind of drawn back to this business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was food something you were always interested in, or was it something that kind of popped when you were in college, or where did the kind of passion for cooking come from?
I think, you know, food was always in the background of growing up as a kid, and I just didn't think I realized it until I got to college and actually got a job in the industry. So my mom's side of the family, so my great grandparents were the first generation on my mom's side to come here to the U.S. from Sicily in 1919 through Ellis Island. Actually, found his name out there a bunch of years ago. We went out there. So doesn't get any more Italian than Vincenzo Milazzo.
It does not.
Yeah, that's full.
That's amazing.
Very Italian.
That's about as Italian as you can get, other than being named Mario.
Yeah. So yeah, then you know, so obviously a lot of cooking and food was a big part of all the gatherings on my mom's side growing up, and then you know my dad's side of the family, mainly Polish. You know, lots of grilled meats, beer, barbecues, parties. You know, my dad was the one who taught me growing up as a kid how to, you know, the old school, the Weber kettle, 18-inch grill, you know, how you stack the coals, how you start a fire. You know, my mom and my grandma with, you know, the super cliche Italian thing with rolling meatballs. And, you know, I look back and it's one of those things where I don't remember all the toys and all the things I got as a kid. Like, what's your favorite toy? I'm like, I don't know, but I can name off all the times we cooked and we gathered together. And, you know, it's one of those things you don't really appreciate till you get older, I think. And I knew there was something for me in this industry as I was looking forward more to, you know, going to work to bartend or toy tables at night than I was, you know, going to my office job, which, right, typically you go to college. If you're a college kid, you're like, yeah, I want to get a job so I don't have to do this anymore. I don't have to wait tables. I don't have to do those type of jobs. But
yeah, but if you're in the industry, that's such a common denominator, like the story of I was going to go be a lawyer or, you know, an accountant or go to business school. And then it just, that was not me, you know, it was practical, you know, there was money there, but it wasn't the passion. So, and it sounds like you kind of lucked out. I mean, you grew up in a family that had like two sides of it, that both of which have strong, strong food cultures. I mean, you know, you have Polish food is
I have a lot of good family.
And, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of my family members on both sides of the family were just really great cooks. And I think that it was a little bit weirder as I got older. And then you get into this business here. I started doing this full time. And then all of a sudden your family starts to ask you questions. And I'm like, you're the ones who taught me. Yeah. You know, some of this stuff, and you guys cook great. And now you're asking me for advice. It was kind of a weird thing, but
yeah. So I mean, the answer is probably obvious, but you obviously named your business Tall Guy in a Grill, and that was kind of a literal, you know, literal name. Like, I mean,
it's a very self-explanatory brand.
Not a short man. You know.
Yeah, I would just say it was the most creative thing I ever did, or like either the most obvious thing I've ever done with my business here.
Yeah. How tall are you? This is important to know.
6'5".
Yeah.
Okay, so pretty tall.
Yeah, there's a guy that works for us that's taller than me, so I'm trying to now hire people that are like
confusing. Yes,
no, doppelgangers, man. So then you just send out people that kind of look like you into the world, and
there you go. Just yeah,
they will never know.
Maybe you need to, everyone needs to be above 6'3", so that way, because if there's a short guy, well, when you show up there, like if there's like a guy who's working for you is like 5'5", they're like, this is weird. This is not the caterer I ordered.
The ongoing joke with my team is everyone bemoaningly says, like, when they get asked, like, oh, are you the tall guy? And it's clearly like, you know, it's one of our female staff or somebody else. And they thought it was funny maybe the first 5,000 times they heard it, but now it's kind of a little bit of a, it's
gotten to be an old tired joke. Yeah. Yeah. But literally, I mean, but it's named for literally kind of what you have started out doing, you know, I mean, you were doing food likes. I mean, I remember some of the inaugural menus and, you know, they were like delicious sliders and like things that I think at the time, there were a lot of fancy fussy catering food. Mm-hmm. And you were maybe one of the first that I really became aware of where you were creating like really good, solid, delicious food, but it was food that was like super accessible.
Yeah. As this business name indicates, you know, I kind of grew up, it was, you know, Italian food and grilling. That's kind of what I knew. So the first couple of menus that we put out and, you know, the first couple years of business was kind of centered around that. And, you know, I think we're known for doing a lot of weddings now. And when I started the business, it was not my intention to get into the wedding industry. I just was like, hey, we should, you know, I know how to do barbecue. We know how to grill and I've got some Italian background. So that's what I know. And I think I can make a go of it just doing this kind of tailgate, casual kind of party, office party, family picnic type vibe. And it just really kind of morphed into a whole different animal from there.
Yeah. Well, and I think it was a time, I think we talked about this a little bit prior to officially launching the podcast, but just I think that it was around that time that weddings started to change in terms of like what people were looking for, and a lot more people were trying to design weddings that really better express their personalities. You know, like people weren't going and saying, oh, okay, we're going to have the big hotel wedding with the fancy plated foods.
Fish, beef. Mm-hmm. Like, it, yeah, people, I've been to several of those weddings now where it was like, I've been to a wedding with a taco bar and that was like the main course. There was like a nacho bar. Yeah. And people want, they want comforting foods. They want foods that they know everyone is going to like instead of, you know, kind of requiring that question of, you know, like, oh, like chicken, beef, or like fish and all that. And you have to kind of like take the sides that, you know, maybe hit or miss for people. People want weddings that are more like the food that they know everyone will love, and those comfort foods that people will have fun eating and enjoy eating, as opposed to, you know, put up with eating and then grab McDonald's afterwards or something like that.
Exactly.
We would say that, you know, catered food doesn't have to be boring. You know, I think, you know, gone are the days of you roll up to a wedding and there's, you know, a row of chafers on an 8-foot table. You know, you kind of got this gray ish meat with a gravy over it and, you know, some overcooked vegetables. And, you know, I always go back to like a simple mantra, but good, good food and good service. I mean, it's, you know, one of my friends, their dad took a golf lesson. It's like, I only took two golf lessons in my life and I'm spending my whole life just mastering those two lessons. And I think that's what we try to do here. It's like, hey, let's make sure we use locally sourced ingredients. We do it the right way and that we treat people the right way. We get back to them when they call us or we answer an email. Like, I know that sounds super, super simple, but I can't tell you how much feedback we get about you've been so responsive or this food is so great. Like, yeah, great food doesn't have to be complicated if you make it from scratch and do it the right way.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is the little things with an industry like that, I assume, where, you know, being responsive and those kind of, that's the stuff that people remember, even maybe more than the food. Because, I mean, I feel like on a wedding day or like on big events, in a lot of cases, people, especially the people who have paid the money and all that, everything tastes good to them, I feel like. Like, if it's my wedding day, you could serve literally, like, toasted white bread. And I'd probably be like, this is incredible. Yeah. You've done great work here. Yeah. It's always the guests that are pickier. But it's the people who buy the caterer, those are the people who rent the caterer, those are the ones, like you said, those little details, I'm sure, what actually makes the difference.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky, unlike restaurants, where sometimes, you know, you get those customers who come in and they're just, you see them sit down, you're like, oh, they're just angry and this isn't going to go well.
Yeah.
But, you know,
there's no way that we can fix this.
The catering, it's for the most part, most of what we do, I mean, with weddings and holiday parties and picnics, it's a special occasion. So I kind of jokingly say with our team here, like, our job is to just not screw this up. Like, if we are just nice and we do what we do, we're going to get some great feedback and people are going to have a good time. Yes. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. This is a party. This is a party. So your job is to support people and, you know, having a great time, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, food is a good way is a good way of doing that. Yeah, definitely. So you kind of started out with that kind of a simple model, and then but your business has evolved. I mean, definitely over the last 10 years, and you've grown.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of maybe talk a little bit about that, because that, you know, it's probably really, really, really largely based in the experience that people have had with you, you know, in terms of service and responsiveness. But did you have a vision for where you wanted it to go, and did it go in that direction, or were you surprised?
No, I think I tell people this honestly, but to not follow this advice, but you know, to my wife and I, we had a little bit of savings, and you know, I went against my finance background and cashed out our 401k and said, "Hey, let's leave a nice stable job and go into the highest failure rate industry there possibly is from a business standpoint." But you know, the business at this point has grown. I mean, I think far beyond what I thought it could be. But at the same time, I maybe kind of knew if we kept kind of chugging away, we get to where we are right now. So I look at, we opened up our first location in Wauwatosa, corner of Ephemera North, right when that neighborhood was just starting to kind of pop for all the restaurants. I mean, now, you know, everything is just, it's well established.
Yeah, now you go over there and you'd be like, oh, this is a perfect spot to, you know, to open up a little catering kitchen. Yeah.
So it was, you know, just my wife and I, and she actually quit her job a year before I did to start doing some contract work, and has her own business now. But, you know, it was just the two of us, you know, a couple of volunteers, and, you know, we did a whopping two weddings in 2013. You know, and you fast forward to last year, we did just over 80 weddings, you know, about, you know, 160 plus full service events, you know, several hundred, you know, drop off lunch orders, holidays, things like that. And, you know, we've been about the doubling in size every other year, obviously until this year. So yeah, along the way, you know, the business has changed a lot. The menus have expanded. We've, you know, I'm no longer the, you know, full-time chef. But we have a great team of people here too. And I think that's, kind of what sets us apart, is not just the food quality and the sourcing local, on a large scale like you have to do with catering, but it's the people on the team that we have here too. It can't just be, when you're doing that many events, it can't just be me. It just can't be our executive chef. It just can't be our sales manager. You have to have a lot of great people being consistent with our food and our service.
Yeah. Well, and 10 years ago, I would say, you know, there was definitely a growing emphasis on kind of local food and beverage, maybe the beginnings of an appreciation for that. But you were probably not, I mean, that probably wasn't the absolute norm for caterers.
No, it wasn't. And I always compare it to, you know, if you have a 50 seat restaurant, you have that luxury of maybe changing your menus weekly. And if you're going to run a special, say, hey, I'm going to get, you know, 50 portions of this for the week, whatever it might be. But, you know, to source local on a scale of, you know, feeding, you know, hundreds or maybe 1,000 people a week, and having that product be consistent, that's a challenge. And it takes our culinary team. It's a process every week to order from these farmers, and, you know, they pull up in the alley with the beat up pickup truck, and we're picking out bushels of stuff. It's like, all right, we've got, you know, 30 pounds of this from this guy. Well, we'll still short like 10 pounds, or we got to get this from over here. So it's a challenge. We enjoy it. But you know, it's part of our business model too, is people support us, and, you know, we think it's our duty to support other local businesses too.
Yeah. Well, and so you've obviously had success. I mean, running, you know, people know kind of what caterers do. You've expanded the number of events that you do, and all sorts of things. You've also launched some products over the years. I think you have a famous barbecue sauce that you started to bottle. You know, there've been kind of little revenue streams, I think, that you've created over the years. But things probably hit a little bit differently, like this year, when we saw, I mean, nobody saw the COVID-19 pandemic coming. I guess, what were your first thoughts in terms of like, how is this, you know, what are we going to do?
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, like everybody else, it was just some weird timing, because you know, every other year I try to take my management team to the National Catering Show in Las Vegas. So the week before everything got shut down, we were actually in Vegas. So we flew back in town that Friday. We actually catered a wedding on that Saturday, which now looking in hindsight was like not the smartest thing to do. But, like nobody knew what it was. Everyone, remember right. like when they said everything's going to shut down for 2 weeks and we'll be back to normal. Mm-hmm. So right. we came right. in.
That, I mean, yeah. I feel like everyone back then, I even remember myself talking to like my family back in February and March and being like, this, I mean, it's not that big of a deal, right? It's just a regular flu. Like we've handled Ebola. We've handled yeah. weirder diseases in the past. Yeah. Cut to us 6-7 months later doing yeah. no better.
Right. It's like one of those cartoons where it goes like 4 months later and then you see like the yeah. apocalypse has happened and you're like, oh, well that escalated pretty quickly.
Yeah.
As it turns out, it was not just the flu.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah, that following Monday is when we got the word. Everybody said, hey, everything's shutting down. So then, like a lot of places, by the end of that week, you know, I laid off all my staff, so about 21 people. Kept on my executive chef and my sales manager to help kind of do damage control at that point. Obviously with, you know, weddings and are a very emotional event for people as, mm-hmm. you know, typically most people are planning one big party in their life and that's kind of it. So we had a lot of people calling, there was a lot of uncertainty, but, you know, we started to work through that and we hit with some ideas to do not only give back and support things like what Caitlin Collin was doing at the Tandem, you know, doing some meals for frontline workers, but doing some pop-ups. And now we've, you know, everybody's been brought back to work. And now we're up to kind of like our normal seasonal staff of about 33, 34 people. Mm-hmm. It's a struggle right now too, with inconsistency of work, with things that have been canceled and rescheduled, that some weeks are getting part-time hours. Sometimes they're getting full-time hours. So that's a little bit of the struggle right now too is, you know, managing that labor cost component.
Well, I'm sure too, we talked a little bit about this, that kind of almost moral, ethical question of like, okay, like I'm running a business, people's incomes rely on me, people's jobs rely on me. But at the same time, I don't want to put them in harm's way and put them in big group gatherings. And how do you kind of balance that kind of those difficult questions of like, okay, an indoor wedding is not a good thing for someone to be at right now, yeah,
right.
but my job is to like cater weddings and do things and, you know, support those. How do you kind of navigate that?
Yeah, it's tough. And I've been very open with my team and, you know, with my friends and family saying like, am I doing the right thing right now? Like we are, you know, we're definitely, nobody's doing a 150, 200 person event, but still even doing, you know, some of the weddings we had this past weekend with 70 or 80 people. It's inconsistent, you know, from venue to venue. You know, some places they're great about enforcing masks and besides eating and drinking, which is great. You know, unlike the, you know, maybe a wedding DJ or a bartender or a wedding planner or photographer, we are definitely, we don't have as much consistent customer interaction. So, you know, our culinary team is mainly behind the scenes. Our servers, you know, if you're dropping a plate of food, you're not hanging out and having a 20-minute conversation with somebody. But it still is, you know, I struggle like, is it the right thing to do? Should we be open? Should we be doing these events? And, you know, my team is, you know, we're in communication about that. And they're, for the most part, I've told people if you don't feel comfortable, you need to let me know. And we have adjusted our safety policies based on feedback from them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've been all wearing masks here and for a couple months now. And we limited access to the building until about, I think, beginning of June. Even now, we kept our wedding tastings at 2 people. Mm-hmm. We let our couples know, like, hey, when you're coming in, if you're a tasting, you know, you have to wear a mask when you're not eating or drinking. So we had our building professionally cleaned and sanitized, you know, UV light technology and protective coatings on stuff. And so I'm gonna knock on wood when I say this, but we've all been, you know, healthy and taking precautions. And I think it's having open conversations with your team too. Like, you know, most of our staff has been very cautious and safe outside of work too. So that's been, I think, yeah. part of our success too to this point.
Well, and that's a big part of the equation, you know, because I think that that one person, you know, going wild in their free time makes a huge difference. So, but that's all really contingent upon company culture, you know, mm-hmm. like, do you have a team that feels like a team? You know, do you have people who are like, at what level are they invested in staying healthy so that they can come to work and contribute and, you know, keep the other people, you know, healthy as well. So, and you guys shifted for a little while in there because you guys were doing kind of takeaway meals. I mean, I think you guys have always done mm-hmm. like lunch catering and things like that. But did that work in terms of kind of a stopgap? Obviously, you know, events were off, but
yeah,
but making food for people is what you do. So what did you find during that time? I mean, did you find new people who kind of discovered what you were doing? Maybe people who hadn't had your food, you know, before that?
Yeah.
Or was it a lot of regulars who just said, oh, we want to support what you do because you guys are the best?
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. I'd say it was probably about 50-50. So we started in, early April, just doing what we call like a Thirsty Thursday promotion, which was, you know, take and bake meals for four people. You know, we sold out the first 3-4 weeks. Again, not a ton of business, but the most we could have possibly done was just three of us here.
Right.
And I talked to a few people that, you know, just kind of business advisors I work with, and they kind of said, hey, you're kind of dipping your toe in the water here. You're kind of like, we're going to do things one day a week, but you're trying to get some projects done. It's like, you need to either just go for it or completely shut down and mm-hmm. live to fight another day. And so that was kind of a turning point for me, saying, hey, let's bring a few people back and let's make a run at it. So we did pop-ups at our storefront here in West Dallas, so Wednesday through Friday. So we did some chicken wing specials on Wednesdays. You know, Thirsty Thursdays morphed into Taco Thursdays. We did a white claw fish fry, which was an awesome invention by our executive chef. And then some stuff for some holidays. But, you know, it did open us up to a new audience. A lot of people in the neighborhood that had seen us and drove by and had no need to book us for a 10, 15, 200 person event. You know, they were almost a little bit sad when we stopped doing the pop-ups in July. It's like, oh man, where are we going to go now? And you guys have great food. And
yeah.
You know, a little bit of food for thought is how we can kind of capitalize on that moving forward. But as the events, you know, started to pick up, we had contracts and obligations with existing clients. So we had to kind of turn our focus back to that. But from that standpoint, it was pretty great.
Yeah. But it really does. I mean, you know, people will say, oh, that, you know, that's not so different from what you were doing before. But that mode of operation is much more like a restaurant.
Restaurants operate way differently than catering. I would say like we're almost manufacturing. You know, you're making mm-hmm. we're making large quantities of things that have to look and taste the same for hundreds of people than just those mm-hmm. portions for 1, 2, and 4 people. So it was, a little bit of a stress on our business model here. None of us are. Most of us here have worked in restaurants, but mm-hmm. once you get into the catering flow,
yeah.
Once you go catering, you never go back to restaurants. Like I will never own or operate a restaurant ever.
Yeah. Well, and restaurants have, restaurants have a tough model. Many actually do catering on the side because I think catering is kind of has a more solid financial return.
Well, and some of them I would say are carried by catering.
Oh,
I know a lot of restaurants in Milwaukee
as much as restaurants are carried by how much, you know, beer, wine, and cocktails someone buys, you know, the catering is the other side of that. So, you know, I mean, a restaurant that can survive without catering is generally a pretty amazing place. During a time like this, you know, I mean, everybody's hit pretty equally, you know, it's when you can't do events, you know, you can't do that. So, it's definitely an interesting world. So how much have you recovered is not the word because, you know, we're not quite through this yet, but how much have you seen business come back?
Well, we have. I think, you know, we were down about, you know, 50%, and this is the common across the service industry, right? Whether it's a restaurant mm-hmm. or a hotel or what have you, but, you know, we were down, you know, 50% in March, 95% in April, Mm-hmm. In May. June, we had two weddings that last weekend in June when things kind of all of a sudden opened up, like right before 4th of July, like, you guys can do some stuff. We're like, wait, what? So we did a couple things. So we were down, I think about 65 or 70% in June. July was down about half. The 1 month this year, it looks like we're going to be profitable in September. So I'm looking forward to September just from a business standpoint. But yeah, things have opened up a little bit. I do think, whereas before we filled in our weekdays with a lot of these corporate parties and gatherings, that stuff I don't think is going to come back until, probably next year when, it's another note to that too. I think the corporate business model has changed a lot too. So we're going to have to figure out,
with more people working from home and,
yeah, exactly.
And seeing that that actually is a viable model, mm-hmm.
We haven't had too many people cancel. We've had to issue a few refunds, but a lot of people have either decided to two things, either reschedule for next year. So next year is looking like our busiest year ever right now between reschedules and
new, bookings, new business. Right.
But we've been able to do some cool stuff too with some weddings that were supposed to be 200 people and now they're maybe 30 people. They're like, hey, we gave you this deposit. Let's now do like a 5-course tasting menu. So that gives our chefs a chance to be creative and do some stuff that's not on our menu and mm-hmm. give people that really memorable experience for that small close group of people. And, being around 30 people right now is definitely a lot safer than being around 250 mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
So. Absolutely.
I'm sure there's gotta be a feeling too of like, if we can survive this, it's going to be a haven one imagines on the other side, because you're going to have all these postponed events from 2020 and you assume that there's just going to be like a floodgate effect next summer and next spring and next fall. I mean, there's talk
amazing
about like,
or horrifying.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah. But there's got to be a feeling of like, if we can just get through this right now, next year we will have no lack of business to take on.
Yeah. One of my friends, and that's, works for Black Shoe Hospitality, is one of my best friends. And he said, hey, the game this year is survive in advance. Mm-hmm. It sucks to say that as someone who owns a business, like you're just trying to mitigate how much money you're losing this year. But I think you're right. I think coming out on the other side of it, obviously the first quarter is always slow for us. So I'm kind of looking at, hey, let's make it through till, next April and May. And, everyone's kind of doom and gloom on social media. And we all tend to see a lot of negative things past our eyeballs. But I really think we've made a lot of progress with COVID the last 4 or 5 months. And you think in a year from now, things are going to be looking much better.
Yeah. A vaccine is going to be invented at some point. I mean, yep. Russia invented one last week, but the largest, air quotes around that humanly possible. But, we read the reports on stuff. I mean, I believe there's one in Britain that's, I think, in the human test. And obviously, it's better to make sure that people aren't going to grow a third arm out of their back or something like that and make sure that the stuff actually works.
Yeah. I'd be so much more efficient with an extra arm, by the way. If I had five more fingers, man.
But on your back, though, like, I don't know how useful a third arm on your back would be.
That's
like,
extra past apps. That's, I can have a grill set up behind me and one in front of me, and I can be doing two grills at once. I mean, that's...
It's a way to be optimistic, Dan.
I watched that Netflix movie, Project Power, this last week, and it's for those who don't know, it's about like a pill that gives people superpowers, and you don't know what one you're going to get. But it's funny because it's just like some people get cool powers like fire or invisibility, and then some people just blow up, or they get like a useless power that the human body is not built to handle. So it's kind of going to be like that, where it's like, oh no, I grew a third arm. I'm going to be so productive now. It's just like, oh no, it's grown out of my foot. Like, that's doing me no good down there.
It just
what a useless superpower.
There we go. But I would imagine, so creativity, people don't think about it. They think, okay, you're a catering business and, you're trying to do big volumes of food consistently. Like, that's like, you compared it to manufacturing. But at this point, like, without some creativity, you sort of lose, a lot of that. So what do you kind of, I mean, obviously you're looking forward to a time when things open up a little bit more so you can do, you know, bigger events and more of what you were doing before. But kind of what's next? Because I know you, and I know you have, you know, plans in your back pocket and things, you know, that.
Yeah, one of the groups I'm in, networking groups, the MMAC said, you know, I think Dan's pivoted his business 3 times just on this hour-long phone call. But yeah, I think now is the time to, you know, we experimented with those pop-ups and, you know, I think this is the year to kind of, you know, kind of throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. And, so we had a couple of things. We actually, you know, we've had a liquor license for the business here for a long time. And, you know, we haven't really done much with it besides, you know, kind of telling people, hey, this is an add-on to what we do. And, so we're going to be spinning that off into a separate brand and advertising that we have a standalone bar service. Mm-hmm. I love the margins. Like any other restaurant or caterer will tell you, the margins on bar versus food are quite amazing.
Quite stellar, yes.
Mm-hmm. And we have some great ideas on how to distinguish ourselves, you know, kind of from everything else that's out there in the market that'll, you know, kind of piggyback on our farm-to-table, locally sourced aspect of what we do from a food standpoint. And then the other thing that we're getting into too is so my executive chef Dana Spand has been with us for 5 years, 4 of those years as the executive chef, and so she had a business idea and actually purchased a wood fired oven trailer. So we're going to be getting into the wood fired pizza business. So we did our first kind of private event last week with it, and this week we'll be at Story Hill Firehouse for our first open to the public event with that. And, she's kind of taken the lead on that. And again, still hyper local with ingredients, you know, heirloom flour for the pizza, supporting diverse businesses and giving back a percentage of the profits from that is something that's a core part of that business model. So not only doing the wood fire pizzas, having that as part of a catering, you know, doing entire menus that are focused around the wood fired oven, late night snacks for weddings, farmers markets. When you're already busy, why not add just like 2 more things on top of it and just keep it rolling, right? But I think if it taught us anything this year for any business owner or anybody in the food business, that you have to have multiple streams of income,
right?
And not just kind of be locked into one way of doing things. So.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and as you talk to people who've been more or less impacted by it, you know, there are people like, I keep bringing up like Chef Aaron Patton of Iron Grate Barbecue, you know, because he had a model where, you know, they had a restaurant. Their restaurant was largely carry out, you know, tiny little dining room, you know, where it wasn't dependent upon that, which, you know, that's a lucky thing, you know, when the dining rooms get shut down. And then a business model where he's like, we do events and they're great, but we also can survive without those. Like, you know, and I do think that one of the keys, you know, to kind of moving forward is looking at, okay, do we have enough things or 1 or 2 things that can kind of keep going almost through anything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Because people talk and it's like, okay, well, once this is over, then, you know, what's next? I don't think we can get through this and not think like, oh, this will never, ever, ever happen again, you know?
Right. Well, now we all have to plan that it's going to happen again. And,
right.
Online ordering was something we wanted to do for years. We've dipped our toe in the water. Now we have an online ordering platform that we're going to be adding about a month behind on this project. But, adding more online ordering, and people are going to want that, that same level of service. But, you know, people don't want to talk to people as much anymore. Right. And that's fine. And we have to kind of lean into it and give the people what they want.
Yeah. No, pretty interesting. So if you had to look back, I mean, I think people just kind of watching even from the sidelines, you can see that, you know, you've definitely, you know, handled your business creatively. And I think that one of the keys has been, okay, you know, where do we have ideas? Probably having good staff who are invested. You know, obviously, you know, you're talking about these ideas didn't just spring from your brain. You know, it's about what do the people that I've hired want to do? You know, what are they good at? You know, wood-fired pizza, you don't just like wake up one day and say, oh, I'm going to do that. That's a tough, you know, there's an art to that.
Oh, yeah.
But if you were to give advice to someone, you know, at this point, you know, what are some of the things that you would tell people to think about? You know, I mean, besides, you know, go get a degree in finance so that you can, and then throw it all away by, you know, cashing in your 401k.
Maybe do that, maybe not. You know, the reason behind doing that, you know,
yes,
what seems foolish to money too.
I'm putting you on the spot with this question, I understand. But I think you are really in a position where you probably can see a lot of things that would be helpful to other people, you know, looking at this.
Yeah, I lean on my wife a lot too, and we're kind of lucky that, you know, there's two entrepreneurs, there's two of us in the same house, and I kind of go back to the piece of advice that she gave me, and I tell people all the time, there wouldn't be a tall guy in a grill if, you know, she didn't push me to do this. Is trust your gut and try to go with what you think is right. You know, doing the right thing never really costs anybody business or money, right? You see that if you have to issue a refund to somebody or something like that. I mean, that can be replaced, but that experience and the rapport that sticks with people a long time. When, like Lori mentioned before, long after the food, but you know, I think from a business standpoint, it's I'm very thankful to have my business background. And I tell people like the most boring business advice. I'm like, hey, like make sure you have a good lawyer and a good CPA. And then if you're in the event industry, like have a rock solid contract and like just spend the time on the boring stuff, right? Because the boring stuff is how you're going to make a living for yourself. And it took me 6-7 years, and I thought, hey, 2020 is the year where I had the puzzle figured out. Like I think we finally settled into a model of, you know, we're going to actually turn like a nice profit this year, and I'll be able to maybe start saving money instead of spending money after 7 years of...
And fate was like, jokes.
Yeah. But it's another opportunity. Now I think, you know, I maybe I'm just a glutton for punishment. I'm just like, man, 2021 is the year. You say that year after year, but we're really at the point now where we've grown, we've expanded, we've had this quick growth, and I think you have to be comfortable with making mistakes, and not everything's going to be a winner. And I try to be honest with my team here about it too, that if I don't have the answer to something, I just say, hey, what do you guys think? Like you guys are, I joke and say, it's almost like a war. I'm like, you guys are on the front lines of cooking the food and interacting with customers. Like, what are you seeing? Like, what can I do to support you? And that's generally what I do. I do my work on the weekends, and my job here during the week is to support my team. You know, it's to be like, what can I help them with? Is it answering sales questions? Is it, do we need to hire somebody else for the kitchen? Or, you know, we have meetings twice a week that we recap all of our events, and then we plan for the weekend. So, you know, I can kind of see what's going on and be plugged in even as I'm not at all the events. So, yeah. So I think it's advice, just trusting your people and being comfortable not knowing what you don't know, or hiring experts that are better at things than you. I'm like, man, my executive chef and our sous chef here, like, man, they could cook circles around me. I mean, they've elevated the menu in ways that, I mean, I never thought we'd have this caliber of food coming out of our kitchen, and I'm not ashamed or afraid to tell people that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to say, I think one of the biggest things and the biggest failures in the small business world is to think, either to fail to recognize that there are a lot of things you have to do to run a business that you can't possibly be good at all of them. You know, I mean, I think as it would be a very, very spectacular person who is like, oh, I'm great at financials and marketing and, you know, in case of a food business, cooking and serving people and being happy all the time and customer service and, you know, all the 49,000 other hats that you have to wear. But I also think that might be, depending on your personality, one of the hardest bits to sort of swallow, you know. I mean, because you started this, you know, you're kind of a one man band ish.
I don't want to go back to that again, too. I mean, you think about like, man, the number of hours you have to work and you know, to scratch and claw to get where you are. And I think it's important to you know, to not forget that stuff. But you know, the harsh reality is like the new person you hire that comes in the door, you know, they're not going to care that you started this from scratch and that you were the person mopping the floors and doing the schedules, answering every phone call, email, you know, financing every single tiny piece of lint that's laying around the building here.
Right.
But your job is to kind of get the message across and to create an environment that, especially now, is safe for people to work in and to kind of support them, and hopefully they have a little bit of fun at work. That's always our selfish hope as business owners. Like, I hope that people kind of like working here.
Have you? It sounds like you have a good collaborative culture. Did you? I want to always think that you build that intentionally. But for you, was that a real intentional thing, or do you feel like you got lucky? You ended up with a good crew of people, and it just worked. Or from that, you know, what would you have to say about
trial
that?
Trial and error. I mean, it always. I look at, you know, I've made a ton of mistakes with hiring, with firing, with interactions with people. I think it's something that is kind of you learn from your mistakes and you make adjustments moving forward, but. It's tough a lot of times as an entrepreneur to, you know, to sit in meetings or your team is really excited about an idea and you're thinking in your head like, oh man, that's not going to work, or that might cost me some money, or but you know, I'm a big proponent of, if you invest in your people and have them take the lead on stuff and you kind of let them fail and succeed, it's going to build a stronger culture and it's going to build a better team. It's going to make them more invested in the business than me just constantly telling people, do this my way, do this my way. I always say, like, yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, if I'm going to get something done and going in a straight line here, but if you get it done with an extra step, like, cool, like the end product is still the same. Doesn't matter to me as long as it gets done.
Yeah. Well, and there's nothing like walking into a job where you have no freedom to succeed or to mess up, like, you know.
Well, I guess the point too, when you have a business, I mean, if you want to grow it, it depends what you want to do with your business too, right? If you want to, you know, if you're a solopreneur or you have one or two people and like you're cool with that, there's nothing wrong with that. But I guess since we have been growing, I'm just like, you know, why not? Let's keep pushing and see how far we can go with this. And you got to let go of some stuff, or you're just gonna go crazy, and you're gonna hold yourself back and the business back. I mean, you have to trust your people and.
Well, we're kind of still like in a hard time now. Looking back. Obviously there's probably things you would have done differently. But you know, cumulatively, like, it's a journey, right? Not a, but are you, I guess, are you happy with what you have, and would you do it all over again?
Oh yeah. I mean, I would do everything over in a heartbeat now. I mean, I joke and say, like, I've exceeded my own expectations for myself.
Nice.
Sounds like a weird thing to say, right? But yeah, I mean, it's hard, especially this year. And, you know, and last year was just a tough year for me personally and a big growth year here at work. So I think that, you know, maybe sometimes I don't enjoy the journey enough, but when I do allow myself to sit back and kind of look, I'm like, man, I took this from, you know, just an idea that, you know, I had on a Saturday afternoon and at the sub-level apartment my, you know, now wife and I were living in at the time to where it is now. It's crazy. And I'm super happy. And I can't imagine it, despite all the stress of this year and all the things you go through running a business. Like, I can't imagine doing anything else, because my literal likeness is on the front door of the business. It's literally named it after myself. But I look at all the people that have worked for us over the years too, and you know, even people that no longer are here, I have a hard time ever having a saying anything bad about anybody, because man, while they're here, people have worked hard, and every single person is, whether they've been a part-time person or, you know, from a dishwasher up to a chef, like, everyone's contributed to the success of the business over the years. And yeah, I'm just really thankful for all the people that we've had and all the experiences.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So,
getting philosophical here right now.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good. I always like it when our episodes kind of go off in these like big lofty directions. Like Lori has all these like nitty gritty food questions. And I'm always interested in like, you know, what is food? What is business?
What is life?
What are we doing here? Yeah. Yeah. What if the color red to me doesn't look like what the color red looks like to you?
Yeah. What if we grow arms in the back of our back
end, one of these times, Lori, we're just gonna have to take some edibles and do a high podcast. Oh,
there we go. There we go.
Next year, 420, we'll do a 420 high podcast.
That'll be crazy.
It's going to be our least liked episode because I've not been high very much in my life, but every time I do, even I know that I'm annoying. Because like I get like super. I'm not paranoid.
We'll be sure to invite you back, like, Dan.
Hey, yeah. Whatever you guys want to do, man, I'm down for. We can get into real philosophical. It's
going to be a special baked episode of Food Crush.
Oh, hilarious. No, but I think that this is a time when I think people are, you know, if you're not thinking like big picture, you're missing out because we can't all sit here and dwell on, you know, the COVID numbers of today, you know, or the sadness in our Facebook timelines. I mean, we have to kind of look forward. I think, you know, another entrepreneur in the city, you know, really said like taking these long walks and thinking about this, and like we all need to take this opportunity to kind of look at what's important to us, what's meaningful, like what we want to do, what we don't want to do, and just, you know, get rid of the stuff we don't want a part of. You know, this is an opportunity to kind of create this new world that has less of the stuff that shouldn't be there and more of the stuff that should. And I think that's probably overall, like thinking about it, I'm like, that's just a really good business model, you know, I mean, just a really good attitude overall when you own a business is it's like, yeah, let's get rid of this stuff that we're not good at or that's really unpleasant, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, I have a person, a new part-time person who's going to be starting for us. And she, you know, recently got, you know, let go from a job, you know, in the event industry. And, you know, she's like, well, I can start, but, you know, I want to take a week or two to travel. And my exact words were, yes, take the time, travel. Mm-hmm. And like, if you still want to come work for us part time, that's mm-hmm. cool. And if you don't, you know, we're still going to be friends and, you know, wish you the best and happy to offer a reference. And, you know, she's going to start for us, you know, in a couple of weeks here. But mm-hmm. I think that's important for people too, that it feels, I want to be careful how I phrase this. Like, I'm jealous of people that have had that time, but I think it's been, I didn't really take much time off last year and the same for this year, but I'm feeling the need to get away, and wife and I rented an Airbnb. We're taking a week to kind of go to Lake Geneva and send an Airbnb with our two dogs and just kind of business plan and space out. And
good for you. Yeah.
But I kind of need that headspace right now to kind of just get ready for next year. Because that's, you know, when you get to a size, you have this many people here now, it's, you know, I'm the guy that has to, you know, have the vision and make sure that we're going to be ready for this, like Matt said, this big onslaught of business next year and this huge pent up demand for parties and gatherings. And that's what we do as people, to get together and party and hang out and have human interaction. So,
yeah. Like I keep saying on all this, and we talked a little bit about it before, next year when things hopefully are, you know, back to normal, it's going to be insane. I feel like people are going to go to every event. Like, people are going to be like, monster truck rallies, hate monster truck rallies, but I'm going to go. Wasn't able to do it for you. Like, tractor pull? Sure, let's go.
Yeah.
I don't know. Concert from an artist that I hate? Why not?
Yeah. I think we're all going to just appreciate things more. Or at least in the short term for the next couple of years. I know I will. I think that, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, it's your default is like work. Like, I need to be working or I need to be busy. And that's definitely a bad habit of my wife and I sometimes is that, you know, we're working too much. And man, it's, I'll be one of those guys at every concert. And
yeah, damn it. I'm just going to be hugging all the people and, you know, eating.
You know what? I'm fine. Yeah. We can do away with hugs.
Beautiful food indoors. Indoors.
I'm fine. Yeah. We can get rid of hugs, honestly. That's something that can maybe the way of the dinosaurs. But like people talk about like movie theaters. People are like, I may never go into a movie theater ever again. I'm just like, that's bullshit. Like, I feel like everyone is going to be so tired of watching movies at home and watching movies in their living room that like as soon as it's, you know, a semblance like legitimately healthy again. Obviously right now it's a little bit more of a mixed bag, but when things are truly healthy again, I feel like people are just going to go nuts and people are going to be like, that's something I wasn't able to do before. I need that again. And I'm hopeful about all of that. That's what's getting me through this.
Well, I think every restaurant food business owner is in the same boat, right? You're just kind of like, hey, like you have to think positive and you can't sit there and just be like, oh, I think it's going to be the same next year. And
not the passion that got you into this, you know, because it's hard work. You had to come in with a passion for it. And if you've lost that, like, that's a message for you too. Like, it's got to be about like, let's get through so I can keep doing this awesome thing that I love to do.
Yeah.
So, and I'm grateful for that because it definitely makes, you know, all the rest of our lives better. So, so thank you for doing that.
Yeah. So, so other than looking for a tall guy behind a grill, where can people find tall guy in a grill?
How can they get in on this?
Sure. So we are, you know, the shameless plug for, we are still, you know, booking events for this year, smaller stuff. We will be, doing our normal holiday business. We'll have that online this year, which will be great. People can order again, like those smaller portions for, you know, 4, 8, 10 people, small, like, you know, small, safe family get together. Calendar's filling up for 2021. So, people who want to book us can do that. We're doing a few more pop-ups this year. I mentioned the trailer business. The name for that is Flower Girl and Flame. Flower spelled F-L-O-U-R, based around heirloom flowers. So we officially throwing some of that out there on the Tall Guy social media later this week to kind of promo that first event. So that'll be our a nice little business line that people can experience the food from, you know, our executive chef, Dana, and find us at more public-facing events.
Awesome.
Where people can find us. We're not doing as many of the. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're tallguyandagrill.com.
Tallguyandagrill.com. Tall Guy and a Grill on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Tall Guy walking down the street with a Tall Guy t-shirt on is probably me. I'm just like a walking billboard all the time. So
there you go.
That's good. You can never leave the branding behind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
well, thank you so much for joining us. This was outstanding talking with you and getting philosophical and learning more about what you're doing right now. And thank you for everything you're doing right now.
Yes.
Thanks for being on here.
Like, everybody always needs people who can make great food and make events better and take a little bit of the work, you know, out of all of that. So,
So
keep on checking. Thank you. And thank you. Yeah. Thank you for persisting and, you know, giving people jobs and all of those great things. So good to chat with you. Yeah. Here's to 2021, right?
Yeah. To 2021. Yeah.
Cut to us next year at the same time. Here's to 2022. Well, that was an awesome conversation, and it delivered on what it promised. We wanted to talk to a tall guy. We wanted to talk to him about grilling, and so it was Stowe.
Yes. Always good to talk with business owners, small business owners who've actually, you know, kind of made it work in the city and who are finding creative ways to make it through our weird, weird pandemic times. And I think, you know, Dan's a great guy.
He's good people. And he was even better conversation. So that was awesome. We have again no sparkling water second. Sorry, y'all.
We can stop saying that now.
Lori, I must let people know what happened. You know, hashtag never forget.
Those special sparkling water seconds.
Yeah, I think that was everyone's favorite part of the show. People skipped over our main conversation.
I hope not.
Jumped straight to the sparkling water second, and then immediately like unsubscribed as soon as they got their sparkling water second fix.
They're like, dude, what the people this want. Dude doesn't even like sparkling water. What are we doing?
Yeah. Well, that, my opinion's the most important one because I'm the one that needs to be convinced.
I want to talk about things that are better than sparkling water.
Right? Like everything?
So,
like literally any and everything?
Like most things. So.
Yeah. Lori, what is our food porn for this week?
So I have a nice little ditty out of a book called The Hungry Ear.
A little ditty.
I guess, you know.
Is Diddy's son's rap name.
Yeah.
There's Diddy and then there's Lil Diddy.
Lil Diddy. So this is a Lil Diddy. And I figured I'd stick with kind of the idea of a tall guy in a grill. In a way. This is an ode to pork that was written by a writer named Kevin Young. And it's sort of, you know, a little romantic ode to the PIG. You know.
Are they making bacon?
Not to be confused with the BIG. No more rappers.
Or the BFG.
Or the BFG.
The Big Friendly. Yeah, that's not true. Not to be confused with the Big Friendly Giant. No. Big Friendly Grill.
Yes. All right. So, pork? Pork, anyone?
Pork. Yeah, right. Pork. Let's read about pork.
Here we go. Isn't it the Ode to Pork by Kevin Young? I wouldn't be here without you. Without you, I'd be umpteen pounds lighter and a lot less alive. You stuck around my ribs even when I treated you like a dog. Dirty, I dare not eat. I know you're the blues because loving you may kill me, but still you rock me down slow as ham hocks on the stove. Anyway, you come fried, cued, burnt to within 1 inch of your life, I love. Babe, I revere your every nickname. Bacon, chitlin, cracklin, sin. Some call you murder. Shame, stepsister. They dress you up and declare you white and healthy. But you always come back, sauce, to me. Adam himself gave up a rib to see yours piled pink beside him. Your heaven is the only one worth wanting. You keep me all night, cursing your four-letter name. The next, begging for you again.
Is he about to have sex with that pork, Lori?
I think he loves pork.
Is he going to F that pork?
He loves a woman as much as he loves the pork.
Is this going to be
or
like
he
the first?
Just loves two pork.
Oh, Lori.
Oh, that's bad,
no.
Right?
Yeah, people don't. That's the gross terminology.
Terrible term. I take it back.
Yeah, make sure we put that part of this podcast. Let's edit that and put it at the front of the podcast because we really
no.
want to make sure people. That is our new theme music. I feel like after reading that poem, that I'm about to watch the first episode of Black Mirror. So that's imagery that I don't need in my head. Thanks for that, Lori.
Oh, you're welcome.
But it is called food porn for a reason.
It is. That had some nice lines in it. Yeah,
it did. It definitely did. It was well written.
And there are foods that I would say, you know, I feel somewhat similarly for. Like, you know,
you
life
foods
just
that
wouldn't
you have
be
a
the
sexual
same.
Attraction toward?
No, not directly that way. But, you know, just things that you're like, oh, my life was not the same before you. My life will not be the same after you, you know.
Which ones come to mind?
Maybe pork in some forms. Cheese.
Cheese,
you know.
Cheese. Yeah, that's fair.
I find myself, you know, thinking fondly of cheese.
Yeah, sometimes you just want to really
I've often said that, you know, the things I would be most heartbroken to not be able to eat would be things like cheese and bread. Like a good piece of garlic bread. I'd be so sad. So I think those things are the things that I, you know, I can relate to when it comes to.
I do love cheese in the biblical way. You're right, Lori.
There we go. See, now you're catching my drift. So. Yeah.
Well, Lori, where can people find you cooing love melodies to cheese?
You could find me at Lo Frederick on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Which are also places you can find the Food Crush podcast. We're the Food Crush Pod on all of those channels. And tune in there because, you know, sometimes we taste beautiful, delicious foods and beverages there.
And then sometimes on video. Yeah. Cheetos, mac and cheese.
Sometimes
so not quite beautiful things.
So, no, it's always beautiful. It's just, it's a new discovery. I don't know. Tasting things is fun.
We're like the, I didn't want to say Christopher Columbus because that obviously carries so much more weight now.
Oh, dear God.
But
no.
Like, I'm like, who's the one of the explorers? One of the conquistadors.
So many of the explorers, like it was all colonialism. I'm not sure we have any that we can like point to that, yeah. You know, that didn't somehow take something from somebody or, you know.
Was Marco Polo okay?
I don't think so. Oh. I think he's got a.
But he made a great pool game though.
He smoked too much pot in college.
Who didn't, Lori?
Anyway. All right.
Anyways, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at A Man About Film, where hopefully I will have a list of the conquistador. Somewhere my fourth grade history teacher is
a conquistador that is worth. Yeah. That is worth.
My fourth grade teacher is right now just so disappointed in me because she's like, Matt, you learned all of these explorers back then and now I've forgotten them all.
Yeah.
Isn't there one like it's like Degas? I know that's like a painter's name, but now I'm
that
now
is a
I'm
painter.
Fine.
I don't know.
I'm not ending this podcast until I find the name of
an explorer who is worthy of your. You know,
I don't even need him to be worthy. I just need like another famous one who's not who's not Christopher Columbus
like Jacques Marquette or someone.
Yeah.
Is like Pierre Marquette?
Yeah, but he's not one that I learned about in school. Oh, Hernando de Soto. That's who I was thinking of. Hernando de Soto.
He discovered the de Sotos.
He did. And Ponce de Leon.
Yeah.
How could you ever forget Ponce de Leon?
I remember even as a grade schooler liking to say that name.
Oh, it's a great name to say. Also, now I really want to open an Italian restaurant called Pasta de Leon.
I would pounce on that.
What if I opened a Sur La Table style restaurant and it was called Pots de Leon?
The Sur La... Maybe.
I'm gonna come up with more pun names.
You will.
This has been Midwestern goodbye.
It has. Going on and on. And do not trust us for historical facts about explorers.
Yeah. Which one do you like more, Pasta de Leon or Pots de Leon?
I think the pasta. I'd go with the pasta.
Yeah, it's probably more viable.
Carbs are always better.
Carbs are always popular. People love carbs.
Indeed.
And people love the Food Crush Podcast.
Yeah.
And the Food Crush Podcast loves you. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. And as always, keep cooking and be safe out there, everybody.